forum about the many facets of parenting. And what we'd like to do is start off with just some very brief comments about how the issue was raised today. And then kind of take a look at some different facets of parenting according to these three categories here. And then involve you in a fantasy, and then we'll move into some discussion. I'm Dale Jampgard, and go ahead and introduce yourself and make a comment.
I'm Norma Everest. Yeah, come on in. Oh, you mean I should sort of begin?
Mm-hmm.
All right. I think we're caught in a strange type of this.
I'll introduce myself.
Yeah, he's good.
Ted Johnstone is on the teaching staff here, and a parent.
And a parent. I think we're caught in a kind of bind. Parenting's a big subject, but at the same time, we don't quite even know how to define the problem. On one hand, it seems as though everyone else is parenting our child. I mean, the Y can teach my child to swim better. The school can teach my child how to cook. The library reads stories to my children. The scouts can teach them how to tie knots. And so there's a sense as though everyone is an expert, and probably most of these people are better at it than I am. So am I really needed? There's just so many parents around. On the other hand, I'm often feeling very alone in the absence of extended family, in the absence of someone to nurture me as a parent in times of stress. I feel like I'm the only one that my child can depend on. So it seems as though both of those things are coming at me at the same time. And I want to go and read some newest book, but if that doesn't work, then I want to go back to something that I'm sure will work, and that's kind of clamp down things and be very much of a disciplinarian. So I'm kind of like thrown back and forth in with those extremes. How does it appear to you?
I think one of the things that I labor with is the expectation I have for myself. And some of those expectations, like you're saying, come from already assumed expectations I think parents are supposed to have, and roles, for example. And particularly one of them that speaks to me is the issue of caretaking. I as a parent am set the tone for being caregiver, and not too sure I get care back. Those kinds of paradoxes. Taking care of the material needs, but also the assumption that from the role of parent that we take care of the emotional needs of our kids. And the same breath, it seems that I'm aware of the fact that the home, where, and as a parent, I really am doing the teaching and providing the possibility for having my children and my child to become practiced in doing all the important self-esteem kind of things that are necessary for the children to have. And so those issues really come into being. I think that being a caregiver stands out to me as a major facet within the parenting expectation. And material things to take care of and emotional things. And in that sense, I find sometimes a lot of binds.
I'm wondering if we had some way to measure it. What percentage of effort in our society has been diminished going into homemaking? In other words, if we take 10 years ago, what percentage of our effort, productivity, went into homemaking and parenting, and what percentage today? The feel I have is that it has decreased, because we now no longer have the possibility of a working wife. We almost have the necessity of two incomes to maintain households, at least to the level that we want to be maintained. And so often it's not an option. That brings two people home from work tired and needing to take care of the necessities at home, maintaining the home, and then getting around to parenting, I think is difficult, just because of time pressures. Not only in terms of doing work, but now the total emphasis on preparing for further career advances. So not only are people involved in their jobs, so many people are involved in advanced education. And so they're taking courses at night, and they have many demands. So that would be one issue. How do we do parenting in the midst of it all? The ball game. And I know as children get older, why it's hard even to find time to sit down at a meal together because of the cross schedules. Another one that I thought of as you were talking was this whole issue of television. We just have gotten cable not long ago, and the multitude of options of things to look at that are interesting, educational, even worthwhile, and some of them not very worthwhile. And what kind of an image do I have to have of myself as a parent to think
can't compete with all that
that I could teach my child something that they couldn't learn better on TV, or that I could be more entertaining or more fun or more anything, and given the other side of it, is it so easy? So we have the competition right within the home that I think leads us to question ourselves. So anyway, this we'd like to paint as kind of the milieu in which we're dealing with the issue of parenting. Now let's take a look at these three. We tried to divide it up in some way. This is one way to talk about parenting in terms of the role of affirming, knowing, and caring. I'd like to have you think for a moment. Think of a person that when you're with that person, you feel tall. You feel good about you. Just being with that person, you feel like it's okay to be who you are. It's that quality that we call affirmation. That quality that just says, I'm glad you're you. Not because you do anything particular, not because you prove it in any way, but out of that relationship, you just feel like it's okay to be you. Now, often as parents, we don't realize the role of that, because so much of our work as parents gets involved with the doing and getting the child to do this and do that, that many of our instructions, many of our compliments, the praise we give our child, you did a great job there, that's neat, you did well there. And when we relate the praise only to doing, the child figures the only way I can really feel good about myself is to do that which gets praise. And so, here we go. Some real experts on parenting. So what we need to look at is how can we at times look at a child. One of the things I would watch for if I watched parents and children in interaction, if I was counseling or working with them, is to watch, does the parent look at the child and talk to the child? Does the parent listen to the child? Because there's an affirmation in that, there's a connection. Whereas sometimes parents are just mechanically, do this, do that, get this done, I'm busy, and begin to treat the child a little bit like an it. The child is there to be dealt with, but the affirming quality doesn't come through. And then to have those times when there's the unconditional affirmation, which just is a hug, a look, a smile, that just says, or the words, I'm glad you're you. Neat to see you. One time we were at a conference kind of thing, and a group of people got in a hotel room, and as everyone walked in the room, they would say, they would applaud, and they'd say, Bob's here, Jeannie's here. And you walk in that room and you feel, wow. All of a sudden, I'm appreciated because I've arrived. And how then to communicate some of that to our kids? Now, what are we dealing with? What we're countering is a deep underlying fear in all of us. And that fear is that we're nobody. That we're nobody significant. That there's something wrong with us. That we're not enough. That's a universal underlying fear. Jesus even refers to it. Which of you, by being anxious, can add a cubit to your span of life? Make yourself more than you are. And in some ways, we reinforce that anxiety out of our own anxiety. Since we're anxious about ourselves, we often are anxious about our kids. We're afraid that they're going to do the wrong thing. We're afraid that they're not going to be enough. We're afraid that maybe they're not going to make it in the way we're hoping. And non-verbally, usually, we communicate that in some way. And they pick up on that anxiety of ours in some form and interpret it to mean something. Oh, I know what's wrong with me. And maybe you got that feeling. So the affirmation is to overcome that. And finally, the affirmation is, you are somebody because you are a gift of God. God has made you somebody. It is nothing you need to prove. No matter how naughty you are somebody. And how to help the child discover that that is a God-given gift that cannot be destroyed or taken away, so that they too can come to love themselves.
That's a good transition. We had such fun talking with each other. We didn't plan the transitions, but that was a marvelous one. Because in relation to the concept of knowing, I want to talk about, first of all, knowing who we are in relationship to parent as parents, and then also the child's growing awareness of knowing. And the two questions I wanted to say is, it's important to think, who is the child and whose is the child? And you've already answered the one, the who. The child is a baptized child of God, graced by God, even though sometimes we see more of the sinner than the saint. But also it's important to answer the question, whose is the child? Throughout history, there have been many different answers to that. It's sometimes people think the child is a prodigy or a possession or a product, something you have to have turn out right. And if it doesn't turn out right, it might reflect on me. Or maybe in our current age, that the child is a problem. Why have them? But really knowing that the child is God's beloved person, and that child belongs to God. There's a dear friend of Burton and mine, Linda Ridgway in Detroit, who years ago, when I was kind of scared of parenting, and asked her, you know, how can you raise children here in the inner city where we were living? And she said, well, either God is God or God isn't God. If I have to move to the suburbs to have a safe place for God to raise God's children, then God isn't God. And that was very helpful for me to know. So the child is God's, and resting in that, knowing that, when I sometimes feel very uptight as though I'm totally responsible, is a helpful thing. All along, the question, who is the child, is continually answered in a different way. Just as we've gotten hold of who the two-year-old is, the two-year-old becomes a three-year-old. And just when we figured out what the fifth grader's like, the sixth grader's like, they become a seventh grader, and that's entirely different. So the whole developmental process, I think, is a hard one. But one thing, as an educator, that I sometimes talk about is that the home can be like an open classroom. It's a matter of setting a safe learning environment. There are boundaries that need to be there. But it isn't so much that we are always teaching our child, because there are many teachers for our children, but setting a learning environment is with appropriate boundaries, and I think that is our responsibility, so that the child in many learning centers, according to their own age and development, can learn. And I think probably some of the best learning that's happened in our own home has been when the children have watched Burton do crafts and want to do crafts along, or when the children have heard us sing and they want to sing along. Providing the spaces and the time and the response, and at that very teachable moment, looking at each other and responding at that time. And one of the neat things about the home is that whenever that happens, is the right moment, or can be the right moment. You don't have to wait till 9 a.m. or 3:15 when it's math class in order to deal with, quotes, that lesson of knowing. But there are also other ways that the child learns to know, and so many other teachers. And one great, great blessing about the Christian learning community is that the child has other mentors and models besides ourselves. And the child will need this. At one time, it was important for us to ask our son, Mark, who in the congregation do you kind of look at? And he said the name of a man. I was very surprised. Not a leader in the congregation, but he had indeed been looking at this person, seeing how that person was going about being a man in the world. And that was a model for our son, Mark. And that's important to know, the Christian community is a place of models and mentors. One other way of knowing that I want to speak about briefly, and that is we're concerned about our children growing up to be the church. And sometimes we say maybe they'll grow up to be the church when they are indeed grown up. But I think it's important to remember that we learn to be the church by being the church. A couple of weeks ago, I was at our own church building. We were folding quilts for World Relief. And one of the mothers had brought along her little two-year-old. And the two-year-old was having a marvelous time playing with all those quilts and probably hoping the church would always be like that. And as we were putting the boxes and shoving the boxes toward the door, she was able to shove the box toward the door. And because she was much lower to the ground than any of us, she could really do it very easily. And we had a great time shoving those boxes together toward the door. She was engaged in mission, in being the church, in helping those blankets, those quilts go somewhere around the world. There would come the time when we would fill in that doing with words, but she was already being the church. Or I think of my son Joel, who last fall visited my aunt in a nursing home. And nursing homes are kind of funny places to be for kids. And my aunt was having a hard time remembering. Joel had on a shirt that had senior high band, and so my aunt could read that he was a member of the band, so he said, "What instrument do you play, Joel?" And Joel said, "I play trumpet, Aunt Carolyn." Well, then she'd soon forget that, and she'd ask again, "What instrument do you play?" "I play trumpet, Aunt Carolyn." And pretty soon they were laughing and enjoying the fact that they could have this relationship, even though it wasn't a relationship that they could have had a few years before. But on the way out, I commended him, and I said, "Joel, you handled that really very well." And he said, "Well, why not? You've been taking me to nursing homes all my life." And so indeed, he had learned some ministry and care through being engaged in ministry and care.
That fits caring.
How about that?
Wonderful. Some of the issues for parenting, it seems that we could really talk about, would be parenting is the caregiver role, but it's more than a role. It's being a caring person. How do we see ourselves as giving care? And do we get care back? How do we deal with meeting our needs as a parent? So the whole realm of caring involves emotions. And what is it? The whole challenge of dealing with my feelings and the feelings of my spouse, if there's two in the family, over against the needs and feelings of kids, creates some joys and sorrows at the same time, sometimes, provides meaning for what I do and what I could do, and yet it creates dilemmas. And the role of caretaker is not a comfortable one. And at the same breath, it's a responsibility. It's given to us. I think all those kinds of issues kind of lay out in front of us. So that the being a parent is really being what? I wrote down here something that I've been struggling with here at Holden this week. By 12 or 13, the child has his or her basic value system in place. Ha ha. An awful lot is happening. I talk to kids who are in high school or junior high school, mainly parents who are working with kids, and early childhood education says that the parent is the first teacher. And now the parents can hardly wait till their kids get to kindergarten or first grade, at least most of them, because then the teacher really knows how to teach. And it's there, and a lot of teaching has been already going on, enormously. Those kinds of questions really bear with us, and maybe we could get into some kind of response along these three kind of areas. Which, I don't know, maybe I'll just raise the question and see what happens. So what are some of the issues you see for you as a parent? What is it, an issue, not some, an issue you see for yourself as a parent that molds with you and that stands out, positive, negative? What are some of those for you?
I kind of got the feeling that you almost reject the caretaker role.
Did I reject the caretaker role?
Or resent it? To me, I see a great privilege.
Okay.
An opportunity. You know, that God has entrusted me with the life of these children to be able to help mold them and help them find values and meaning in life and help them find directions that will be meaningful for themselves. And, you know, given that privilege, I'm happy to be able to care for them that they have the opportunity to find themselves.
So a lot of meaning comes from the caretaking.
Right.
I wonder, before we move into that, what I'd like to do is take people into a... one of the ways we can reflect on parenting is to reflect on the way we experience parenting. And what I'd like to do is invite you to go on a trip back into your own childhood for a few minutes. And let me guide you and see what comes to your mind out of your own experience. And so... please close your eyes and let's just find yourself back in your childhood home. Maybe smell the smells of the kitchen. And notice what the feel is in your home. What home felt like to you. Now let your mind take you to some ways that you became anxious about yourself and how that was communicated in some way by your parents. What ways did you feel called into question? Maybe even doubted your right to exist. Or ways you felt you weren't enough, or there was something wrong with you. Now let yourself be aware of some ways that your parents affirmed you. Do you remember a time when you felt really good about being you, and you felt that they or other members of your family affirmed you? Do you remember them being glad to see you? Okay. Now, as you were growing and discovering the world, you had different ways of knowing, different ways of discovery. And you had the content of what you knew. How do you see the role of your parents in helping you feel good about how you knew things and in helping you discover or learn things? Remember a time that was particularly meaningful. Just let the scenes come to your mind. Rather than trying hard to remember anything, your mind will just take you to different things. Okay, and then our third area. And that is how you began to decide what you were going to care about and how you could express yourself, express your caring. What happened as you began to express yourself? What happened as you began to demonstrate what it was you cared about? How did your parents either assist you in learning how to express and in affirming your kind of caring, your interests? Or did you feel them blocking? Was there a difference between mother and father in how they treated you? Okay. And now, out of your memories, let go. Let go of the feelings that you've experienced now. Let that be in the past. Take a good full breath of air. And as you exhale, let yourself become present here in the room. Because a lot of times that does bring to mind some strong feelings, some ways of being, sometimes some sadness, sometimes some anger. Let yourself come and be present. And what I'd like to have you do now is move into groups of three. Just pick up your chairs and find somebody you don't know so well, maybe, and just move into a group of three and share what kinds of awarenesses you came to as to the ways you were parented and what it was that you either appreciated about that or had some difficulty with. There may be some things you want to finish later. But now, would you share some awarenesses or questions or what kinds of issues you came up with in your groups or that just came to you personally? We don't have to limit it in any way.
How do two parents come together, having come from totally different environments, and then trying to determine how they will parent when they've had totally different traditions, and decide what will be tried or what will be, quote unquote, the law?
Or the way to do it.
Yeah. May I interject something? We were just discussing that in our little cluster group. And I know from my husband and myself, coming from two opposite backgrounds, that I think probably what we have done is taken the bad and put it to good use, and in being some sort of a guide and making that become a positive thing with our children. An example, perhaps, of coming from, say, a family that is not particularly physical, affirming type of family, and using that and become a parent that would say, you have done such a good job in being a very positive outwardly thing that has truly helped us. So coming from my own background, that has been the best experience for me, is by using that bad and making it a very, very positive thing, and always letting the children know that even though my childhood was not particularly fun, that we want you to become a very strong person by making something good out of that experience. Mm-hmm.
A couple might begin at the point of realizing and remembering that the person that they have chosen to marry was the product of that other parenting. So it must not have been all bad, even though it was different.
My question was coming from the side of not bad, but good. You yeah. both had a positive upbringing. You bring these ideals with you, and you want to use them, and the other does too, but they clash.
Okay.
They've both been positive, not the negative.
Okay. Negotiate the
right, and
the team.
And neither, both wants to kind of keep the positive, but they don't quite mesh because they're from two different realms, which are very positive for each of these people. How do you mix those?
And they're not of the nature that you can add them. I mean,
right.
Because they're contradictory. Can you give an example even?
I don't know.
Okay. But they're like, they're two things. You couldn't do them both ways at the same time, in other
right.
words. They would be different ways.
Sounds like one of the goals that you have for yourself as a parent is that the two of you or whoever you're talking about, one of them have a united, consistent.
Right.
So consistency is one of your biggest concerns.
Right.
And when that's not happening, that gets to be a little stressful. How do we work out teaming?
Some things that have something to do with timing.
Yeah.
There are some ways that are more appropriate when a child is very young. There are some ways that are more appropriate when a child is in grade school and so forth. And those can be some of the ways you can negotiate. What is most affirming to the small child who doesn't speak well, who has limited freedom, so to speak, and then what's more affirming and what would be a better way of handling the situation with child in grade school and so forth. So that you both may have, you know, positive memories and positive recollections, it may come from a different period of time.
I wonder too if different approaches might not work better for different children.
I mean, my wife and I come from very different operations. So Karen is ready to discipline by anything other than look. And I think the problem looks to discipline you as a kid. And yet, the style is between us that our children seem to not need anything in the way of physical discipline at this point in our lives. And we both work towards affirming that at this time. And should, well, we don't have any when the girls get a little older or not, but it's a model that we continue to test. Uh-huh. And the test is, does it work today? And if it doesn't, we need to work out what we have to do today. I mean, the way of affirming your children or directing them changes so much in a period of 6 months, even that. We have to find new ways and creative ways to understand their problems and yet not encourage the things that they tend to manipulate or decide for us.
A word that jumped out for me in what you were saying was we need to work out. This is a real shift in marriage and family life today, and that is the role of negotiating. In the past, so much was determined by roles. We do this because the man does this, dad does this, mother does this, woman does this. And today we need to do a lot more trying to understand and negotiate and work out what fits for now, especially with the differences.
And it's okay, too, that each parent does something differently. If I hand my kids over to my husband and expect him to parent in exactly the same way I've been doing all day long or all week long or whatever, that puts him in a real bind. They experience different people in church. Somebody said to me, it's good for the kids to stay overnight because they find out that you're not the only mean mom in the world. So the differences there between you are okay too. You don't have
yes.
to agree.
Not only puts him in a bind, but if you keep trying to get him to do it your way, you're also in a real difficult bind.
It's a level of trust that the other person is competent. There's a lot of stuff that goes into that.
A couple of you said that, I mean, the good thing about variety, both at different ages and different personalities of children, and like what two, three of you said about deciding the basis of what's good for the child at that time, which is quite different than two people having a kind of battle, because kids will learn not only that that's inconsistent, but that it's confusing, or will learn to work that. And the fact about different parents, two different parents doing it different ways can be even refreshing as long as there's a consistency in that. And so again, it's not as though one is working against the other and you're going to get a lot of game playing in that.
I have a question in terms of both of us, both my husband and I being brought up in terms of being project oriented and almost both kind of workaholic, you know, you get this thing done. How do you break out of that and find, I suppose it has to do with right brain, left brain stuff or whatever, but how do you break out of that mold when we saw it in our parents too? That's what we're doing. And I want to be able to learn to play games with my kids. I hate to play games with my kids. I like to read, but there are things that I need to move into if I'm going to be comfortable with my parenting, you know. How do we get out of that non-feeling kind of thing? I'm not sure how to describe it. Do you understand what I'm talking about?
How do you meet an expectation you have of yourself that you find hard to meet? Is, you know, how do you get to that point?
Yeah, when I've been raised that way myself, I've asked him to take the time to do these things with me, and I don't know how to do that either with conscious in a lot of ways.
I suppose one thing is that if you can identify more specifically as possible what that might be for yourself, that's one of the first steps to kind of focus on. I don't think it's easy to change our patterns. It's not easy to change any pattern from anything we're locked into. But if you consciously want to make the change, then I think there's ways that yourself and other people around you maybe can help you do that. Maybe you just aren't practiced in doing some of that. How are some other suggestions along that line for maybe some of the rest of you that have worked at wanting to do something but you don't feel comfortable in doing an aspect of parenting? Maybe you can get some feedback on that.
Well, I realize now at this late date that we didn't do enough playing of games with our children. We always grabbed a book and the kids grabbed a book and everybody read all the time. There can be too much of that too. If you're going to have time.
If you want to change it, yeah.
If you're going to have time to play with your children, you can't sit around and read all the time. They really feel pushed away and their only defense is to read themselves. And that can't all be good, it can't all be bad.
Can't all be bad though. I heard in you, or something that I sometimes hear in myself, so it may not be right, but say it anyway, that sometimes when I think I've got to play more, moving the other brain, then I've got to work at it. So I make that a new project. Does that ring a bell? Yeah, okay. And that it works better when I just think something that I really enjoy doing and really just do play. And pretty soon, maybe they're playing with me too.
But I'd rather just read with them.
So it's not something you're comfortable with.
Yeah, I really have to work. I think
how about your husband?
He's the same.
Maybe people could identify what they do with their kids that they feel. I mean, maybe I am doing some of these things and I don't realize. Mm-hmm. Going on walks and things like that.
Do you enjoy it? Do you go enjoy it?
Yeah. I'm taking them swimming. But it doesn't somehow seem like I'm getting that eye contact, some of those things that we're talking about. It feels like that's, in a sense, on the periphery.
Do they enjoy when you go on walks?
Yeah, that was a choice that my oldest daughter made.
Well, if they enjoy it and you enjoy it, sounds good.
Do you make it so simple?
Okay.
I mean, they're not questioning you about values or things that are important to them, or are they not opening up to you in some ways that you feel that you like having open up to you?
Well, I don't know. I guess I was just thinking about sitting at the table at Holden and not necessarily making that. I guess we seem to be doing things, but not really maybe talking, sharing feelings. Mm-hmm. Although we do have a family meeting, that's been a really helpful thing. Each week we do share special things that they have with each person.
So you might check with your children what they would like in the way of playing with them and let them teach you how to play. And you might wonder at how your home feels. I know for me, I usually went to other friends' homes to play because my home felt like there was always work to do. And some of my other friends were only kids, and their mothers seemed much more understanding of helping their children play. They'd bring us refreshments and that kind of thing. I had a couple of brothers, and we were always, underfoot, it felt like. So I'm concerned that my home now feels like a place for the children to play, where I can encourage that and affirm that.
There kind of goes that, not necessarily a bad feeling, but something that is completely different that you wanted to change. And that's a positive thing, I think. Taking, something that you would like to change. Mm-hmm. Which we all like to change our appearance, I'm sure.
But so, I think it's really conscious that you really care about doing a good job as a parent. I think that's a sign. You want to get as much out of this as possible. Yeah. It means that you're getting something out of it too, but it's not an area, you know, that sometimes where you're really good at. Maybe you're not good at doing something.
It would be interesting, you were talking about finding out what your children would like to do. And I know this last winter we took an extended 2-week Christmas trip down to San Diego. And we did ask the children what they would do. But two different personalities wanted to go two different ways. So what do you do then? Flip a coin, right? So oftentimes it is difficult. You get any choices that say four of the three most popular things, and which one can you agree on? To try and make that a fun type of experience, whether it be play cards at home or do you want to go biking today, or do you want to hike, or do you want to go out and run, or whatever that may be? Do you give them choices, or do they want that? Do they want guidelines, like you were saying, the boundaries?
Well, it's a neat opportunity when they have two different wants to say, how do we decide this? And talk with them about how we decide it, not just have the goal of getting it decided. Because we need to work at helping our children learn how to negotiate for family life. That's the new major dimension of family life, that we need to help them learn those skills.
That also encourages decision-making and problem-solving by giving choices and helping them, because that's something that's going to permeate throughout their life, and so why not?
And helping them have choices. I know a woman who helped her child, very young child, make choices, but giving them choices that were appropriate for him to make. I mean, not would you like to go to bed or don't go to bed. I mean, that's an inappropriate choice for a young child. And sometimes we do those, and then we back down, and they're very confused. So given that, would you like to wear the red shirt or the blue shirt? I would like to wear the red shirt. One other thing about as the children at least get older, we found that they really do have different interests, and it's really fun at that time, maybe for one of us parents to do something with one child and one parent to do it with the other child, or two parents to do something with one child, and they really shine at that moment. That there comes times when, for a moment at least, you dance a different way and then come back together again.
One of the things in our family that our kids talk about the most, and our youngest is now 18, we have four children, but every year on their birthday, they got to have the day with their dad. And it wasn't necessarily on their birthday, but as a gift. And pick a Sunday or a Saturday coming up or something, it was their day. And they got to choose what they did that day with their dad. And so it could be all day fishing, or it could be an overnight, so they could get their Boy Scout second class badge, and poor Dale got rained on because his feet and head stuck out of the tent. Or it could
that's
be
dead too long.
It could be going visiting waterfront parks or something like that. But when the kids get together now, that we talk about the olden times, they will bring up these days with their dad when they were really special, and it helped Dale learn how to play. Because he had to do what the kids wanted.
Work home.
Back to family decision making, it was like we have a 16 and a 13-year-old, two daughters, and I think if we would have tried to make a family decision, I don't know where we would have gone for vacation this year. We would not have been here.
You all stayed home.
One of us wanted to stay home, the other wanted to go to the ocean, and we wanted to come to Boulder.
We didn't say parents didn't have a vote.
Or just once in a while, parents just say, this is the way it's going to be.
Yeah, that's pretty much how we do that.
Because your needs are very important, too. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, and your perspectives are still broader, hopefully, than many times theirs are sometimes. Yeah.
Well, since our grandchildren have been coming to Holland, and there's never a question of where they want to go. And one of them had gone with their dad to a medical conference to a medical conference in Paris. And after that, they came here. And I thought, this will be dull stuff, So I asked him when it was all over, I said, which did you enjoy the most, going to Paris or coming to Holden? He said, Holden, of course. He didn't have to even think about it.
Yeah.
Let's have like two more comments, and then we'll fulfill our contract for 10 o'clock time.
I had a quick comment that may fit in with what she's talking about. It came up in our group, and the two things that we remembered as children that we really enjoyed weren't playing. They were times when we were with a parent doing a job. Like, one thing I really had fond memories of was going to the barn and milk the cows with my dad. I was included. I was made to feel special while Dad did that chore. And you did a similar thing. And so it doesn't have to be play to be a real special time.
So your projects might be paying off.
If they can be included in the project, that's
as a real even person.
Yet.
As a real person there.
Yeah, as a real helpful person.
You know, not just you have to really contribute. Shopping, but, or you really, you know, hey, I'd love to have you come with me and then make some verbal and physical sharing.
Hey, you want to make any closing comments?
I'm a little interested in your comment about sort of needing to be eyeball to eyeball. That wasn't the word you used, but and I think one of the influences related to that I wanted to observe that perhaps you didn't mention earlier is the subtle influence of the television programs that say this is what parenting and family is like. So this is what a family is like. They're always joking together, or they're always, the little kid is always making the decisions, or and I think that subtly gets in. So we've got a script in us that somehow we have to, even if we don't watch them ourselves, they're in the menu of our thinking. Somehow family life is all happy and joking and
making their bed or doing the laundry.
Yeah, and when we wrestle with these problems, we solve them in a half an hour.
25 minutes we get
instant. Yes, and everybody finally helps make the decisions. Yes, I mean, the consensus kind of thing. And everybody ends up agreeing with all the decisions.
So you're saying not to expect a storybook situation in my own life.
Yeah, and nobody's ever left unhappy. And I think that's script of expectation.
And one of the real puzzles, I think, puzzling things, is that each of our children are different, and we feel like we treat them each, you know, fairly and equally, and we try to treat them the same and so forth, and yet each one is a very different personality, and some have a lot more difficulty in life than others, and often we don't understand quite why. And so be gracious with yourself as parents. It's a tough job. And yet it's a great one.
I think we should, you want to say something?
No, I was saying, I think I've learned more by being a parent about myself than I have anything else. Some of it hasn't been
that's both tough and
too
good.
Nice. But the opposite has been more than true, I think, picking up your comment there earlier. You know, it is a great opportunity to learn and to grow.
We are not God and do not need to be God. God gives us the gift of parenthood, and that's sufficient.
Well, then even God the Father lets us stumble all over the place.
Even his son tried, let him go.
I,
let him go.